Welcome to the Making That School Cool podcast, the link between research, practice, and theory for those interested in the activities students are involved in during non-school hours. The Making That School Cool podcast is produced by Case for Kids, a division of Harris County Department of Education, and I am your host, Mike Wilson. Recently, I had the pleasure of attending the Boost Conference in New Orleans, and we actually did a presentation, my colleague Brandy Nichols and I, on cultural capital. And one of the participants that was there is Mr. Emmanuel Dupree Jackson, who is the founder and executive director of the EJS Project. And we had the opportunity to have a discussion, and I thought he would be an awesome guest on the podcast to share some of the things that they're doing in different parts of the country, as well as why is it important to have after school programs, what inspired him to do it. And so if you know someone or if you feel that there's a need for this type of program in your area or community, then this particular episode is for you. So Dupree, how things are going on your end?
Man, I'm blessed, man. Things are going really well. Thanks for asking and thanks for having me too, Mike, by the way.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I enjoyed the conversations we had at a conference, and you are definitely an inspiration. And then for those people who are getting into this particular field or maybe working in the field currently, I think sometimes when we do some program sharing, that's just the motivation you need to keeping it on.
Yeah, definitely. Most definitely. And I had that same feeling when we met, man. When we was chopping it up, it didn't take long to know that you know, you meet a lot of people in conferences like that, settings like that, and not too often you follow up. So right. I knew we were going to follow up because we had something to offer each other. We had, you know, the passion was evident. We love what we do. So I knew we'll end up here. So, man, thank you for following up. Thank you for everything you said, you know, for inviting me here, for being, you know, open to share with me, pick your brain, ask me questions. All that just make us better, brother. So I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Well, we'll start off with, can you give us a little background information about what motivated you to start the EJS project?
Absolutely, man. I'd love to. You know, I will try to keep a long story as short as possible without leaving out important parts. But it comes down to when I came back home to my hometown, because I did leave for school. Thanks to athletics, it got me more committed to my education. So, you know, it took me off to college and I went off to the Midwest. And when I came home, I really was, for the most part, underproducing everything that I went away to look for, to search for, to try to increase like the outcomes of my life, you know, education, graduate, job opportunities. I did the first part, but when I came home, I just rested on falling on doing the things that my friends who didn't go off and didn't push themselves. I was doing the same thing they was doing, so it wasn't any difference. So I realized that one, and the biggest thing is I looked around at my community and the things that I learned being away in college, I realized that a lot of kids that look like me or raised like me would never have the opportunity to experience, to witness, to grasp. And I felt kind of, you know, disappointed, sad at knowing that how different their lives can be if they just knew different, saw different, experienced different. That was something that I always thought about. And then, you know, initially when you think about stuff like that, and you know you're from this community, you're like, well, somebody's gonna have to come in and show us, or you need a lot of money, like how can I give them this, right? You think about it, you kind of doubt yourself. But then one day you realize, you know, if not me, then who? And you got to do something. And some of the factors that helped me get to that point to realize it was the passing of my father and the birth of my daughter, which happens about 8 months within each other. So those are two life-changing situations, but they played a big part in me realizing, hey, man, you only get one shot at this thing called life. What are you going to do with it? It's on your heart. You connect with you. You have a passion. You have enough to offer. And even if you don't have the funds of a philanthropist or someone or foundation now, you got the passion and the will, and the rest will come. That, you know, that old saying, if you build it, they will come. So all those things really, Mike, just came together at the right time. I didn't have much. I felt down on myself, but I knew that in order to make an impact, in order to make the future better for my daughter, that people had to start working now, making investments today. And I just wanted to be one of those people.
applaud you for that effort. Thank you for sharing that story. I think there's a lot of people who fall in that category, and for whatever reasons, they let the hurdles or the self-confidence or the lack of confidence or the lack of resources stop them from doing something. And you're giving a good testimony on the impact of actually starting to do something and what could come out from it. Now, when I did some research on some of the service delivery you guys offer, I love some of the names you have, like About That Action, Purpose yes, Pays, The Project Hub, Each One Teach One. That's one of my favorite Du Bois statements. Can you give us a brief summary of each component?
I can, man. I would love to. But first of all, thank you for saying that. We need to hear that every now and then because, you know, everything we do, our approach, I talked to you a little bit at a conference about it, is really we flip that triangle upside down. You know, of course, we set up in the same structure as any nonprofit. We have a board of directors, we have our funders, our donors, you know, other advisors, committees that help us drive this. But really, and you know, I tell them this in meetings, they're not our priority. Our priorities are our families, our parents, our students who we're trying to help, trying to impact. So everything we do reflects that, including the terminology we use here, you know. And when the kids say that and about, that's how we really say it, you know. So I used to feel weird writing it the correct way when I know, wait, we don't say it like that. It was easy for us to find our identity there. Of course, it's a little pushback when, you know, you have those board member people reading it. Is that proper language to you? But everybody eventually comes around and get it. So when you say that and you recognize that, it's like, see, that's what I was looking for. The people who are, so thank you for saying that. But I'll start with About That Action. That's our mantra. That's our call. That's really an attitude that you have to adopt being a part of EJS, whether you're staff, volunteer, board member, student, parent, because we don't stop. We're community-based. I'm from the community. It's rare when an executive director or leader or founder of an organization is trying to change outcomes or improve deficits when you're from there. You live there. You're still there. Like, I didn't make it and come back and try to improve my community. I'm in my community. I see the challenges and I want better. And I try to create a movement so we can do better together. You know what I mean? That's a different model than, hey, I'm doing pretty good. I have enough money. Now let me go try to go pull my, which is nothing wrong with that. But it's just our motto is we're moving forward together. And that just changes the whole dynamic. So you know, About That Action is what it sounds like. You know, when you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. Before we put the About That Action on it, it was really our community, civic and community engagement era. And it still is. It's us being out in the community, Mike. It's us, it's the reciprocity, like, and we'll get into it later, like with our businesses. Like, how do we form business relationships? It's simple. Like, my job is to keep our teams engaged in positive out of school activities. My job is also to raise money, right? And I don't have a product to sell, so our motto is not social enterprise. But what we do have to offer is kids, respectful kids. We bring kids in, we mold them, we help them, give them the tools and the skills to shake hands, show up on time, all those things. That's our resource. That's our goal. That's our product. So what we do a lot, from different events to when businesses, other nonprofits, they have events, they have expos, workshops, we always have our kids volunteer to show up, set up, break down, man a booth, help with anything. And that's year round. And we're both helping each other. Like, we're helping that business, we form a relationship, and that business is helping us. It's exposure. And then when events come around, they're there for sponsorships. Or it's just really community focused, or About That Action. And the second part of it, when it comes to building the civic muscle, what I've learned later in life, around 27, 28, is the power of my voice. And one thing that helped me realize that was attending a city hall meeting. Something as simple as knowing that by law, by policy, when a resident comes up and state their name and address, and whatever the question is, how serious, it could be sometimes jovial, sometimes nice, sometimes not even a question, a statement. But whatever it is, in that city commission meeting, you have someone whose job there is to type it up and record it. And policy says, if you ask a direct question, the dais, the board, the commissioners have to respond, or even not right there that night, maybe follow up with a phone call or email, you know, down. That's power in that, Mike. Just knowing that as a resident, you have a voice. It could be something as little as, hey, I noticed on my block, the street lights don't come on, but two blocks over or there, the street lights are on. I feel for my safety. Okay, you don't just have to feel that. Go to the city commission and say it. And, you know, the power of seeing 2 weeks later, those street lights now on in your community changes a kid's life forever, because I was that kid. That was literally my story when I was 19 years old coming back from college. It just so happened someone in my life was a city commissioner, and I was venting to her. I was like, hey, all these robberies and stuff is going on. Do you see how it looks on Atlantic Avenue? Go two blocks in. Why are all the lights off? We have the poles there. And she said, you know what? That's what usually mostly the robberies happen. That's a good observation. Come say that city commission. I did. It hit me. Something changed. Now my community got lights. And that kind of, I didn't know it then, Mike, because I went on football, didn't focus on politics or anything in college, but it planted a seed, and I passed that seed on to my kids through about that action, civic engagement. Feel like I'm talking a lot, but I get excited. So that's just about that action.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I think that's great. I think that's very powerful, because a lot of times people will complain and they won't do nothing. And, you know, in order to make change, you actually got to have action, and you actually got to do something. And we all have a voice. And I think sometimes, unless we experience something, then you don't realize that or understand that if you make a statement, like you said, at a meeting, be it a board meeting, be it a city council meeting or whatever, all this stuff is being documented. And if they don't respond to it, then that's part of their history, that's part of their legacy, and so on. And so, you know, as adults, unfortunately for many of us, we didn't have the resources or the people who were aware of these particular steps, and things didn't really go. We could have had a better life, a better childhood. Great. And so I think the fact that you're teaching this to young people, the fact that, you know, you're learning it yourself, so you never stop learning, and, you know, you're practicing what you preach. And I think that creates a great model for young people to follow, and makes it a little bit easier for the next generation.
Absolutely, man. And that's why we in this work. That's exactly. That's what we do. That's what we set out to do. So,
do like the different components. Do the students pick this, or do they get a chance to participate in all of them, or do they do one at a time? How does that work?
Yeah. So our programming, what we do, Mike, if a student is interested in being a part of a EJS program, no matter how they're referred, whether it's a partner, whether it's the local community park, gym, the staff there who knows us very well, whether it's behavioral specialist on a particular school campus, guidance counselor, teacher, football coach, little league, parent, a friend of mine on social media, you name it. We get referrals all type of ways. It's just, that's part of being from the community. I could be in a grocery store. I can be at church. Wherever I'm at, they're going to say, Mr. Dupree, this such and such kid needs you. We don't turn away any kid, but we don't accept every kid. Every kid does get a chance to come in for. We start every interest with an intake, and that's basically, we have the parent, their support system, their guardian come in, and we set the tone. You know, why are you here? What are you looking to get out of it? This is what we have to offer, and this is how we operate. This is what we will accept. This is what we want. So, you know, I mean, and that's when we start. All of our programming is free. Now, kids have the option. Like, we have some kids who are EJS kids through and through. That means we see them every day, because our Project Hub, which is one of our program areas, is our after-school, out-of-school, our space. You know, they come in, they get snacks. We have refrigerator cabinets, stay chock full, go grocery shopping once a week. They have, you know, quiet time to do their homework. They have access to screamers, you know, Disney Plus, Netflix, tablets, all the technology, all of the things that usually are barriers in our kids who we serve. For 3 hours after school, you got everything you need. And it's a safe space, and you have adults who you can kind of bounce stuff and process stuff with. So that's Project Hub in a nutshell. So some kids, like, just like Project Hub, right? Other program, Purpose Pays, which is one of our most popular programs. It's a summer-based program, but we have programs throughout the year that lead up to it, which is like our teen career readiness, which That's a series of workshops, public speaking, resume writing, etiquette, interviewing skills, financial literacy, those things, so that if you do those well and you commit it and you go through all those weeks, you're eligible to interview for our purpose paid internships. Again, goes back to how we leverage partnerships in the community. It started off, we piloted this 4 years ago. Now we're kind of in demand. Businesses look for us. They call, hey, we heard about your internships. Because the deal is, Mike, we provide the kids with the skills, we prepare them, and we kind of, the exchange is, we'll tell a business, we'll give you a student who's ready to learn, willing, capable, mannerable, can take feedback, all those things, the basics. But what we need from you is to give them real work experience, evaluate them, tell them what they can improve on, what they don't do so well, real work experience. And we tap into our funding sources so we can pay them. So our kids, if they are able to work those 8 or 9 weeks during the summer, 14 hours minimum, 20 hours max, they get paid twice. So first week of July is their first check, $600. First week of August, their second check, check, $600. So a total of $1,200. But not only does that give them workforce readiness, skills, experience to find out what they don't like, what they maybe do. The big thing there is why it's not just free, is because in communities of disadvantage, are really poor communities, poor households, it doesn't do families and kids enough service if they just doing things for experience all the time. They have to have some income coming into these poor households. And the people who I explain this to, they totally get it and they understand. And that's what we do. And the very last one, programming, is our Each One Teach One. And it's what it sounds like. It's more of our individual approach, sometimes still group stuff, but our tutoring falls up under that, which we do, testing, prep, also one-on-one individual class, makeup work, homework help, catching up. We have a robust tutoring program, which we partner with different people to help, almost tutor for student ratio, not quite, but that many volunteers. And the other part of that is our growing our mental health support. Because just by doing this work, we're going to year 10. Around year 5 or 6, we realize we don't have everything that these kids need. And sometimes there's another level. They're dealing with something that we just can't give them feedback or direction to cope with. Maybe they need someone outside of us. So we started growing our approach and our strategies to solving that problem by just connecting with therapists that look like our kids, and that's work in itself. And we got a pretty good network of those therapists now. And now we have something once a month, which we don't even call therapy sessions, they're therapeutic sessions, because we have group non-threatening conversations with our licensed clinician. And the theme changed every time, the location. Sometimes we're outside, maybe the beach, maybe the office, ice cream parlor. We've been somewhere everywhere, you know. But it's just to always know that our kids know at least once a month they have a place where they can let it out, they can talk about it, they can bring up a topic. And the last part with that, the last 2 years, we've been receiving funding to be able to pay for sessions to alleviate the barrier that most families face. If they don't have insurance, no one has the money to pay to talk to someone about problems. Just figure it out. But we do. So we cover those costs. So those are our programs in a nutshell.
You know, I commend you. So it's not like I'm saying that a lot, but the fact that you humbled yourself enough to say, okay, these are some additional needs, but we don't have the expertise or the skill or the experience to address these needs. So let's find or partner with those people or individuals who do. And unfortunately, some people, you know, want to try to solve problems based on how they would do things, mm-hmm. and not necessarily what's needed for this new generation, what's needed for this time, and what research has said, you know, these are the best practices. So I think that was some great advice, in which, you know, you're dealing with kids that are coming to your program with all kinds of baggage, if you will. Even your staff and ourselves are coming with baggage. But making sure that they do have a network or a resource or somebody they can talk to help them with that, that definitely makes the load a lot easier. Now, what age group do you serve?
13 to 19, a graduation, whichever comes first.
Okay, so it's teenagers, secondary students, things like that.
Yes, sir.
Do you have any problems recruiting the kids? I mean, I'm sure you've been around for a while, so they know about it.
Yeah. Great question. And, no problem. Actually, the problem is the opposite, man. We're continuing now to try to grow our resources so we can grow our staff and we can, like, our physical space, because our waiting list grows, and every day we're telling more and more people, no, we can't help because of that age range or because we're at capacity. So our problem is really the opposite. It's too many people want to be here and we can't serve. And I will say, even though our numbers say 13 to 19, there's always outliers or exceptions, you know, based on siblings, or if you're 12 years old and your brother comes here, that's 15, we're not going to separate, you know. So every now and then we may have a 12-year-old, but we try not to go any lower than that for a number of different reasons. Not that we don't want to help them, Mike, but our program is set up for a little bit more mature group. And again, we want to protect what we have. So many kids want to be here because they know what to look forward to. They don't have to, teenagers know they're not going to be around little kids, and they're not going to be. So that's just keeping who we are. We found our niche. We knew that, you know, resources and everything runs out for teenagers. We got to fill that gap, and that's what we do.
You know, and I think, you know, when we were talking about the components, and you mentioned the Each One Teach One, even though you may not be working with all age groups, the fact that those students that are participating in your service and service delivery, it multiplies. So they bring that knowledge and skills home. So they may be able to help a younger sibling or a parent, or, you know, somebody who has faced some sort of dilemma that you've discussed in your program. So, yeah, that's definitely a skill that young people need to learn. And I think going through that developmental stage from child to adolescent, and, you know, that need for wanting to be independent, that need for wanting to be older than you actually are. And so teaching them that it's good to ask for help, or it's good to, you know, express what you may need. And then once you learn those skills, it's good to give back as well. Now, you've done a lot of collaboration with local businesses, and you mentioned getting qualified people who could address a particular need involved with your work. Can you give some examples of some of the collaboration, and how did you realize that, hey, this goes beyond my scope of expertise? How do I reach out to these particular individuals and get them involved with what it is that we're trying to do?
Oh, yeah. So many examples. One of our programs up under About That Action is our Young Legislator Program. And really what that does is we're not trying to create the next generation of politicians. Like, that's not it. But it's really more about, at least every resident should have an understanding of how the policies and laws that are created to govern them come into place. I just think that's just basic knowledge that our kids should have. That's what we try to do. We try to teach them, you know, the process, legislative process, how laws are passed, who enforces these laws. So our kids, you know, if you're part of that, you got to know all the city commissioners, the county commissioners, the state representative in your district, the senator that covers your district, you know, things that even the average adult doesn't know. But we're just trying to get these kids a head start. And so example is, okay, that's the goal. That's what we want from our kids. Now, me as the community leader and executive director, that's what I get paid for, the work, the connection. You know, I reach out to our commissioners. And it's, to be honest, it's so easy. So if you're listening to this and you are executive director, this is something I will always share, because you're dealing with so many different challenges at one time by simply, because it, in keeping it as far as context of the legislative program. So we're scheduling, we'll reach out to all of our commissioners, our city has five, and we'll ask them, hey, we're starting our program, we would like to schedule a time, 2-hour window to meet with you, or have our kids meet with you in an intimate setting. And our kids, we learn about their background, where they come from. And they always surprise, you know, to find out your mayor wasn't always an ideal student. You just get suspended. You know, like, it's just real stories. You talk, you learn about them. Then our kids start realizing, oh, they're not a super smart, super wealthy, super, oh, I can do that. Or it's just like, you know, and then on the other side, our mayor is looking at, you know what, these kids, that's something. And I didn't know EJS was doing this. I didn't know. I appreciate teaching young people how important what I do now. And it just, so when we need them on the back end and we need a letter of reference from our city, we have it. all the way up, we do the same way. And like you said, you mentioned earlier, like we're learning with this. Like I never knew our county administrator or how important they were. Just by doing young legislative, we met one person. They say, you know what, you should take these kids to meet the county administrator. And we met her. She just so happened in our county. We're Palm Beach County, West Palm Beach, Florida. To put that in perspective, every other day our highway is shut down because the former president comes in and out. Trump lives here, like right here. So like this is our county, very wealthy, affluent and all that, right? But the lady who really runs it is a black woman, right? And when we brought that group of kids, because you know our demographic was primarily African-American, Haitian-American, black minority kids, every now and then Spanish, whatever. But when you bring that group into her chambers, you should have saw her face, how it felt to come out and be able to talk to them and see a little girl who could be her niece, her grandchild. You know, like, I'm trying to express how it just started as a program. We're just leveraging the people who are already there, asking them for some of their time, but it just spans. And now the lady who writes the check for every employee in Palm Beach County manages the budget. You know, like, it's no bigger employee in any one county than the administrator. And I didn't know that until I learned, you know?
Right.
And the connection that I see our kids be able to have with people like this, because what I learned is, even though I'm leading this, a person like Miss Radina Baker, that's who our county administrator is, it was a couple kids in there. She said, hey, here's my number, call me, email you need me, letter reference for college advice, you call me, you need me. We leaving that meeting, I made the introduction, but my kids have more access to her than I do,
right?
Like, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's so much power. So that's one way we leverage just relationships. And and I alluded to it earlier, how we leverage businesses just by showing up for them when they need help, because all businesses do need hands and help. And also by partnering with them in mutually beneficial situation, like our purpose pays. Extra set of hands, we'll pay for them, and we guarantee to work on having a kid that's prepared, ready, and have the skills to be able to be a benefit at your hand. So those are a couple examples.
That is awesome. Well, I know there's a lot of people in the community. Some people may have made mistakes and they want to, you know, get back on track and do some positive things. Other people who want to actually, you know, support certain areas and so forth. What suggestions would you give anyone who wants to be involved in mentoring youth?
Well, first of all, before you know, you got to ask yourself honest questions like all of us do. You got to humble yourself. You said that earlier. You have to humble yourself in, what do I have to give to offer? Like, if someone's child was spending an hour or two or three a week with me, what is it I would like for them to take away? What do you ask yourself that first? It has to be that start. Then the very close second is, am I committed to this once I get started? Because what I find by doing this work sometimes, Mike, is a person can listen to a podcast, watch a clip on Instagram, or watch a TV show and be inspired for a few hours, make a call and want a mentor. But a week or two in, when it's not convenient, like when you committed a month ago to being at this volunteer event, planting trees with this group of kids, but here we are a month later, you're just not in the same mood, it's easy to call with an excuse because it's not a paid job. Like that type of stuff I know on the back end. You have to be committed. You have to know who you're trying to help, what demographic you would like to work with, and know that you got to be committed. You can't walk, it's no success without consistency. So you can't walk in and out these young people's lives. They're depending on you. And especially, again, someone like me, you don't want to burn bridges with executive director, because I don't want you asking me to be brought into my kid's life and then you're ghost. Like, you can let me down. You can not show up on me. But once we get to that step, you ask me to be around my kids and you do that, I can't separate the business from the personal. We can't be as close anymore, because it's that serious. So those two things, just knowing it's a labor of love and consistency and just having a focus.
Well, we definitely can hear the passion in your voice. And I think sometimes when other people hear that and they may have that little flicker And when you hear, you come in contact with somebody who's passionate about it, know, then that can kind of make their little flicker into a flame. So again, I do want to commend you with the work you're doing. I know you got a busy day. Like you said, your time clock is a lot ahead, about an hour or so ahead of mine. Yeah. But before we wrap this up, do you have any final thoughts?
Oh man, I thought about it and I wanted to wait and see how this conversation went before I gave my final thoughts. But what I would say for the tone of this, because we're talking amongst each other and we kind of already had these conversations a little bit offline, but really we're talking to the audience that's listening to us, whether it be no matter your role in your organization, it's always just listen to the kids, because you can never get in this work, there's no such thing as not being innovative, getting stale, getting outdated, because with the trends changing, it's nothing new under the sun. You can find everything you're looking for if you just listen to your kids. And it's hard to listen to your kids if you don't make time, or if you're always trying to govern or police the type of music they listen to. Cut out all horseplay, cut out all. If you're not letting them be who they naturally are, you're limiting how much you can learn, how much you can observe, and how much you can respond to help them and guide them. That's advice that I would give to anyone. If you're signing up to help and work with children, you have to humble yourself and realize you have just as much to learn from them as they have to learn from you. And if you open yourself up to doing that and truly believe it, you'll be really surprised at how much growth you'll see personally and professionally, because I thought I was getting this to help kids and my whole life has changed and I'm a whole different person, because if I'm giving advice or if I'm correcting the child's behavior, naturally I'm not a hypocrite. So I'm gonna say, hey, you know what, you were just giving this lecture about this and you carrying yourself like this, it forces you to be better. And so that's why I say listen to your kids, listen to your family, and you'll always be ahead of the game.
Great. That reminds me of an old saying I read somewhere. I don't know if it's Confucius or, I would love to give credit to whoever said it, because I didn't create this, but it says something like, a good teacher is one who learns from his or her students. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, because you're right. Mm-hmm. You got to take them where they are, and, achievement, sometimes we don't necessarily look at what it was done, but look at how far a person's come to actually do that. And we forget that. And the only way you learn that is by actually building relationships and accepting your kids. Well, DePrey, I appreciate you, taking some time to be my guest today on the Making That School Cool podcast. Don't be surprised if I reach back out to you, and hopefully our paths will intersect physically in the future. So again, I enjoy talking to you. I'm pumped for the day. So you keep doing the work that you're doing.
Yes, sir. This is a good start to the day. And I tell you, one way to make sure, just keep me in mind when something pops up, kind of like how we met, if the learning opportunity, gathering, conference, summit, whatever pops up that you have interest in, that might sound good. If it sounds good to you, it might sound good to me. Forward it. And, okay. And maybe that'd be a place next time we link up. Could be in learning settings, whatever, but just keep me in mind, man. Same way here. I'll forward you if something comes through my desk. But it was a pleasure, man. An absolute pleasure.
Okay, and I certainly would do that. To all my listeners, I want to thank you for joining me today for this episode of the Making After School Cool podcast, where we really focused on building relationships with young people and starting where you are and actually do something. So please join me for future episodes as we continue to explore issues relevant to the out-of-school time field.